Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
Even to a deeper level is to learn what people respond to and don't respond to. Yeah. So the most of the world doesn't respond well to somebody like me that will go on a diatribe and say, here's how everything is, here's how it works, talk super fast, here's, I got all these answers. Their brain doesn't work like mine. So they're not going to follow. They're not going to understand. The best skill I ever learned was to translate both directions. Okay. We work very high level technical stuff. People don't understand what we talk about. I had to learn how to translate it to them in a way that makes sense to them. Just like a doctor has to translate things to you that you don't understand because you're not a surgeon. And then I had to learn what they were trying to say to me in non-technical speak and their issues and translate that to what it means to us. It's the best thing I ever did. I was okay at it before COVID, but I feel like that's why our security department especially has been so much more successful, because I'm the one out talking about it. And I've learned how to translate that into the way other humans communicate. So I can still give you very high level knowledge that'll impress you. It's not going to impress you if I'm talking in acronyms you don't understand. You just think I'm an idiot that's blabbering. But if I can tell you things that are very critical, very serious, and put them in a way that your brain processes that, now you want to hear what happens to them. And so that's what I've done, is just went through that learning process of how do humans communicate? What are they receptive to? What are they not receptive to? What do facial instructions mean? And as you do that, you just finally learn it. I don't have to think about it anymore. It's built into me now because I took the time to understand the normal communication processes. And here's the cool thing. All this stuff's in a book. It's all online. It's all, you can find it. And so I just put myself to school on how to deal with people better.
What happens when a leader who's always trusted data, zeros and ones, suddenly faces a world where the rules don't compute? For Chris May, COVID ripped down the walls he'd built as an engineer and forced him to lead with something he'd long avoided, human connection. Today's guest, Chris, takes us on a journey from rigidity to resilience, from seeing people as math problems to understanding the data of human connection. Before the pandemic, Chris was a brilliant but blunt engineer on the autism spectrum who thrived on technical precision, but people, not so much. Then COVID hit. Transactions froze, supply chains collapsed, and fear was literally everywhere. In that chaos, Chris discovered that the survival of the business and his team depended not on sharper code or tighter metrics, but on compassion and empathy and presence. In this episode, Chris shares how breaking down his walls helped him build trust, how he and his team members restructured their company around their strengths and transformed their business to one that thrives by making a difference in people's lives, not just in their IT systems. Chris is the Vice President of Security and Growth at Advantage Technology. There, he helps businesses stay safe from cyber threats without drowning people in technical jargon. After starting his career securing nuclear assets in the U.S. Navy, he spent over 20 years protecting organizations as small as neighborhood nonprofits and as large as a 16,000-person healthcare system. From 2010 to 2015, he safeguarded DuPont, then Fortune 500 company, keeping more than 60,000 computers and valuable research out of hackers' hands. Today, Chris guides leaders through privacy and security rules like HIPAA and PCI. He translates cyber risks into plain language, action plans, and shows boards how good security can actually grow the business. Chris is a frequent speaker and educator. He's known for turning intimidating geek speak into stories that even I can understand. Chris, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you here today.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm very excited, especially since I learned so much about you, and I think you have a brilliant story to share today. So what was your career messy moment?
Oh, gosh, that one's pretty easy for me off the top of my head. It was during COVID. So by saying that, people would understand. We all went through a lot of different emotions and had to navigate business and personal issues in a way we never had. And I think during then was the messiest that my life had been around business. I'm used to numbers and I'm very analytical and we're engineers. So it was a time when the math didn't make sense, right? We couldn't add anything up and come out with 2 + 2 didn't equal 4 anymore. I think what got so messy for us is our big focus is trying to make sure that we support not just the company, but the employees that helped build the company. And we got in a position to where we sell a huge technical instances and we couldn't get equipment. So if we look back to COVID, remember, we sell wireless networks and servers, and we were waiting on shipments of $300,000 and $400,000 worth of hardware that didn't come. And so when it didn't show up, you couldn't install it. You couldn't get paid. You couldn't pay your people. And it just, I remember it feeling messy, right? Like how, and nobody had an instruction manual, right? There's no way to navigate it. And so that was the one time in my life as a very structured individual, a very technical individual, that it just all felt messy and there was no manual. Right. There was no instructions. There was no way to Google and figure out what to do.
I imagine as an engineer, so you're an established engineer, you really are great at process. You're great at figuring things out. What did it feel like to not be able to figure something out the way you always had before?
I would say frustrating is an understatement. That's what we're known for at Advantage. We're known as solution engineers at our company. And so to not be able to engineer a solution was mind bending. Also, I think the other part that was interesting and hard for us is when we would come up with a solution, the rule set would change. So we would say, okay, this is how we're going to deliver services. We've got to get to these people. They've got to work. Some of them are stuck in their house and have to work. Like, we got to keep our people safe, right? We don't want them to get sick or get anybody else sick. And we would get this plan in place as engineers do, and we would have it all structured. And then all of a sudden, either the state or the government or the county or a customer, the rules change the next day.
Yeah, what you thought you were dealing with was not what you were dealing with when you made the plan. The rug got stuck out from under you or pulled out from under you. How did that look if I was watching y'all in action during that messy COVID time where you weren't able to get the things you needed, you couldn't support your people, you know, the things you would be invoicing for, you're not bringing money in. What did it look like if I was watching you?
What you saw was what's typically a very well-oiled machine, it start to get squeaky and not so well-oiled, right? What we saw quickly that we did not plan for, right? When we saw this happening, we try to make a plan and we tried to plan for the business side of it, right? What's going to happen? What's going to happen if we can't get tech? What's going to happen if we can't do this? What we saw happen very quickly that we weren't prepared for that got very messy is the people,
okay, right?
People were scared. People were nervous. People were scared for their kids. I think we can all say people made decisions that aren't rational for them that they wouldn't normally make. And so very quickly, and we started to see our customers do that as well. So we started to see this whole new set of noise we had never had. Customers are having internal issues with employees, with people, with getting offices open, with people scared to come out. We have employees that are scared to come to work, that are scared to go to offices. We had people acting completely differently than they ever had and getting very polarized about things they had never been polarized about before. And we're not political by nature, or we don't get into any of that. So it was a whole new realm that we had never had to navigate. I think that was one of the things that was so shocking. And then in that, you don't want to have to let anybody go because their life's already upended and they're already don't know what's going to happen. And some people have already lost jobs in their family. And so it just became this, it was like an entirely new way to have to navigate business.
Yeah. What I'm thinking is as I watch you talk about this and you're moving around a lot, but I feel like it was chaotic. And I feel like it was chaotic because it wasn't just the technical stuff that was changing, but you enter into a new place where humans aren't even behaving like you were used to them behaving.
That's very true. And that's when it gets very hard, is because if you've got these people, so we employ a lot of engineers and technical people, and you're used to them, they do the same motions and the same things. And then all of a sudden, you've got, I think, one example of a person that had been with the company for 6-7 years and was very stable and very solid. And then all of a sudden, this person is acting like a completely different human being one day. And they're not getting on the calls they should get on, and they're not showing up, and they're not. And you're like, what happened? It wasn't they didn't want to do a good job. There was other things. They had people in their family that had gotten ill. Somebody passed away. We had an employee pass away from COVID. We had one of the very early, like very early in, we had an employee that lived outside of DC where I am that passed away. And it's, so you're starting to deal with these, and that scares the other people in the company. And now nobody, well, they're like, oh my gosh, I was with this guy at some point. So it was just all these things that I had never had to deal with.
What are you like in those situations? Tell me, when you are facing something that is one, human emotional driven, two, I never saw this before, and three, so unpredictable, because it was not only that you had the tragic circumstances of an employee die, but then people are worried about their own health and safety and what are the implications to them. What happens for you when that comes your way?
So for me in particular, it was even made more difficult. So I'm very open about the fact that I have Asperger's syndrome, which is now on the autism spectrum. It's always been on the autism spectrum, but it used to be diagnosed as its own thing. And so for me, I'm very analytical, right? I think in black and white, ones and zeros. I'm a math savant. So like, I just understand very high level functions. That doesn't lend itself well to dealing with people's messy functions, right? Like, I can understand everything. Math comes out a certain way. There's one answer. Computers work a certain way. They're binary, ones and zeros. There's a certain answer. People aren't like that, as we know. I had managed to insulate myself from that pretty well over my career, right? Big, supposedly successful career, but it mostly dealt with engineers and people that think the way I do. And so now we're in a brand new situation where none of that thinking works, right? Everybody's a little messy. I was messy. I didn't know what was happening. And so it was harder for me, right? I couldn't understand why business processes were breaking down in the way they were. And I couldn't get my head around, why can't you just do your job? Because that's how I've always been wired. Not in a bad way, but I do my job.
There was a little bit of an if-then rule book, and suddenly that was upended. And you are finding yourself being like, wait a second, all the ways I've trained myself to be successful in this world are just not working.
They were flying out the window.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't. And here's the funny part for me. Here's, I think, might have been one of the dividing lines, is I couldn't figure out why everybody else was acting in the manner they were, not realizing that I was also acting in a very different manner than I would have before that happened.
But I guess you could see everybody else, but you couldn't identify that in yourself.
We never can. We're always the last to see what we do, right? And so I had to get very analytical about it. And I was like, what is going on here? I was more angry than not. I'm not usually a very highly emotional person because of my condition. So I was very angry and couldn't understand why. And I was like, what is happening here? I thought people were just failing. And it really caused me to do a lot of deep dive and be like, okay, how in the world are we going to deal with this? I'm over here worried about we might lose hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'm having that conversation with a gentleman and he's worried about that his wife's going to die. I'm like, wait a minute, we're not in the same place
here.
Yeah,
what a juxtaposition, right? It puts things in big perspective, I think.
It really did. And I'll be honest, when they finally locked the country down, I don't know if you and I have talked about this before, but when they finally locked the country down, I packed up my motorhome by myself and I don't have any kids or anything. And at the time I was not in a long-term relationship, and I packed up my motorhome and I drove around the country for 3.5 months. There was nowhere to go. Like, if you were at home, you were at home. I had a letter from the governor of the state of West Virginia that said I could travel because we do a bunch of work for the state. And I packed up my motorhome and headed west during COVID. It was just me and semis and a few motorhomes on the road. And I was gone for 3.5 months. I put satellite Wi-Fi on my motorhome so I could work, because I do have some things I have to run every day.
Right.
And I just left. And I think it's the first time I had ever spent time to try to understand the human element outside of myself. I know that sounds crazy, but it's just not how I think. And so I had 3.5 months and I went and traveled and saw friends I hadn't seen in 20, 30 years and just did whatever I wanted to do. But when I did that, it allowed me to separate from all the noise, right? My office was 6 blocks from my house. I've been doing this a decade. We've built this thing from 21 people to 120. Like, it's a whole different operation. And I just think I needed to get away for a minute and figure out not only who everybody else was, but who I was first. And I started to understand that, like, this might be more meaningful and satisfying. I was always concerned about the people, but about making sure they were paid. Can you pay your
mortgage? Transactions.
Can you pay your rent?
Yeah.
Do you get a check? Yeah. I want you to get a check so you can support your family. The emotions for me don't get tied into it. But at that point in time, I started to really talk to, first of all, our people. I'm on all these meetings with people, right? We can't go into offices. And it became much easier, I think, because the walls were down. And so here I'm sitting somewhere in Texas with a desert behind me. They're sitting in their house stuck and we just talk. Like, they're like, what are you doing out there? And I'm telling them what I'm doing. There were so many people I knew that were living vicariously through me traveling around the country.
I bet there were.
Yeah. And I think that helped because we had these real conversations about, what do you wish you could do? Like, I wish I could do that. I'm like, don't wish, just go. Right. And that's always been my philosophy. My wife will tell you, I live on the far edge of life where people are very afraid to go. Because of that, I do things like that. I just say yes. And I'm like, let's go. I don't believe I would have had the same understanding of the human element of what was happening in the world and in business and all that at that point if I wouldn't have separated myself from it. I wasn't watching the news. I wasn't listening to other people. I was in a motorhome just traveling around the country and I was talking to real humans. And I really made a point that everywhere I would stop, I would find people. Because we were all scared. The whole world was scared, but people were still people. And I had to get gas for my motorhome and I had to get groceries. And so I was like, as I do this, I'm going to just figure out what's happening.
So let me get this straight. You lived kind of your whole life being a successful kind of ones and zeros thinker. And then COVID came along and there was all this noise. And part of the noise was, of course, the transactional stuff wasn't even working. But then you have entered the human element. And that was maybe like a big storm around you. So you said, I'm gonna give myself the space to really learn. Was that intention?
No, it was a product of what was happening, right? I'm a, like I said, I say yes. So when I just, that's my philosophy. Like it's just, mine's a yes and or a yes but or yes comma, right? There's always some qualifiers there, but I just knew it was my one chance to go. And then when I did that, I started thinking if I'm going to do, it was a thing, right? It was a progression. So
right.
I'm out on the road for a couple of weeks and I'm like, if I'm doing this, everybody's telling me this is the coolest thing ever. I need to reshape myself. There's got to be something that comes out of this. I kept remembering, I was like, there's good that can come out of everything. My grandfather used to tell me that my whole life, Chris, there's good that can come out of everything. He was a say yes guy, right? Say yes, but let's figure it out. And so I started thinking, well, how do I make myself different? And every conversation I had, 98% of the conversations I had prior to COVID were about the work. Yeah, people do the niceties and they're like, oh, hey, how are you? Whatever. Seems like once that happened, a few weeks into COVID, 98% of the conversations I were having were about people and how they were struggling or not struggling, how they were coping, how their family was coping, who was possibly going to die, who was sick, who was not sick, who wanted a shot. And so it like just flipped it on its head. So I had to just live in the moment I was in. If I was going to gain anything from it, I had to be a part of that moment and a part of what was happening. And again, it's easier when you're by yourself and there's no noise and you're in this motorhome and you're in beautiful places. And I do really well on my own. And I have a tendency sometimes to self-isolate. And so in that moment, when I did that, I had already chosen to definitely self-isolate, but I said, let's not do that as much. And let's make sure we're having conversations with real people. And I still had a security department to run. And I still had all those other things I had to run. It happened over time. I found myself being like, wait a minute, this is so much more important than all the other things we were worried about. And at some point it clicked in my head about halfway through. I was like, if I worry about this stuff as much or even more, then the other things are going to come.
Yeah.
It goes back to our founder, who's one of my closest friends. He started this 24 years ago, the spare bedroom of an apartment, just doing break fix IT by himself. He went on the internet to find out how to make money besides being a doctor or a lawyer because it took too long in school. And so he got an MCSE, which is a Microsoft certification, about 20 plus years ago. He started this little company. And he's always been the kindest person I've ever met, 100%. And we're different, right? He's an incredibly smart engineer, super kind, cares about people, soft heart, almost to a fault, right? Doesn't want to fire anybody, doesn't want to let anybody go, doesn't want to hurt anybody. I'm an engineer. If you're not doing your job and you're not functioning, you got to go. Flat out. So
different ends of the spectrum. Yeah.
Yep. Both very smart people though. Both understand things, understand business. And he's always been that way. He's always really, he'll tell you I'm one of the smartest engineers he's ever known. I'll tell you he's the same, but I'll also tell you he's one of the best people I've ever known. I call them people because I'm didn't used to be. And it came from that, right? I started to hear things he had told me over the years and that we had talked about. And his whole focus during COVID was the people. We've got to keep these people employed. We've got to keep these people in a job. We're from a place that's poor. We're from Southern West Virginia in the coal fields. There's not a lot of industry down there. We're one of the few people there that is supporting growth and jobs, right? We funnel a bunch of money from all over the country and all over the world into there. And so of course that's his focus, right? These people have families and kids and they need to pay their mortgage. And it really started to resonate with me at that point. It wasn't that he was saying anything different or doing anything different. I was seeing the people differently. I was seeing inside their lives. I was seeing their kids on web calls. I was seeing their dogs, their cats, their babies, the things they were afraid about and loved. And then all that advice from him over the years and watching how he operated just slowly took root.
It's like, it made these more people, sense a little bit.
Yeah, because I'm here trying to build a business. I can't build anything without these brilliant people that have done this. And I'm like, wait a minute. If we lose you, the other Chris, as we call him, Chris with a K, or if we lose you, Zach, or if we lose you, Brian, through all this, we've lost so much more than just some business from COVID. And so it really started to impress upon me that the people were the most important thing. And then that really started to flip a light the other way and realize that our customers are people too.
It started with you realizing more about yourself. You got to touch and see parts of people that you had never... You had blinders on maybe before, not intentionally, but you were over-indexing maybe on the technical side. And then now you've not only said, hey, I can't build anything if you're not here, but we're here doing this for not the deliverable, but a human on the other side of the deliverable.
That's what changed. And Richie said something at one point, our president and founder, he said, our customers are people, and these people are going to be here on the other side of this. And we have to make sure that they're with us on the other side of it. And I'll never forget that. I was like, what does he mean? There was a lot of upheaval and a lot of upending, and things were changing, right? And the one thing that we knew is if we served them and looked at them as humans and served them well and did our job, we could ride this out together and we would all figure this out and we would get to the other side. We couldn't just stop. There's days we felt like quitting. Believe me, it's like, we can't do this. But I think that was the dividing line for me. And again, it was the first time that I had seen my clients humanized in some ways, right? I have clients that are friends and people I've known, but my philosophy has always been, we're going to get on this call. We're going to figure this out. We're going to solve the problem. We're going to move forward. You're going to pay me, right? You're paying me to do a job. And it was, the conversations became easier. What I found out, and I found out we're like anybody, we fail. There's times we fail. The failure is so much easier when you have a personal relationship with these people. You can fail and say, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. And they know you. So they know you didn't intentionally fail. Yeah. They're not assuming things in the absence of facts. They have the facts about who you are and how you perform and what your standard is. And then they can accept. And it goes both ways. So say the client fails. And before I would have been like, oh, their IT director broke this. It's terrible. I can't believe he did this. He doesn't know what he's doing. That's old Chris. That's wrong thinking. The new Chris is like, hey, maybe he's never done this before. Maybe he was just trying to do something to save him some money, right? He's just a guy. It's just a woman trying to do their job. We've been doing this 30 years. This person's 28 years old. How in the world would they not know this? And so it's, again, it's that initial humanization of it, right? This is a person, not just a bot. And it's having to learn that. And it's, I'm not there, right? This has been a huge journey for me since COVID. I'm super analytical. So I would just have to work it like a math problem. I've started understand people the way I understand math.
Oh, I know we have a lot of technical folks out there and people are like, okay, give me the math of a human. Do you have anything you can share with us?
100%. Yeah. So my mom was a special education teacher and she helped me tremendously growing up. I wasn't diagnosed with on the spectrum until I was in my 30s because I'm 47. So I was older and I had a high IQ. So, just put him in a gifted program and isolate him. That worked. That's what they did back then. They didn't know any better either. So what's happened for me over time is to not look at it so analytical. And it was my mom that had said years ago, try to just work people like a math problem, like you do everything else. But what I mean by that is I don't have the same emotional makeup as most people, right? So we would probably all agree that humans run off about 50% emotion, right? How do we feel? How are we internally? How's our brain work? And how's this? I don't do that. I'm just super analytical. So what I had to understand is they're not thinking the way I'm thinking. And I also have to understand that they're showing me and presenting me emotions that tell me how they're thinking and where they're at and how they feel. I don't understand those, but I can learn them. I can pay attention and say, okay, if facial intuition is this and they've done this and their body language says this, that means they're feeling this way and maybe not verbalizing it. We do a lot of things through nonverbal communication.
Of course.
And so I'd studied a lot about that and a lot about what's nonverbal communication look like. I did what an engineer does. I put myself to school on body language and on facial recognition and on like how to better communicate. I taught myself because that's what I'm good at.
So you had a formula. If the face looks like this, then I can have a hypothesis that might be what's happening over there for that person.
100%. And even to a deeper level is to learn what people respond to and don't respond to.
Yeah.
So the most of the world doesn't respond well to somebody like me that will go on a diatribe and say, here's how everything is. Here's how it works. Talk super fast. I got all these answers. Their brain doesn't work like mine. So they're not going to follow. They're not going to understand. The best skill I ever learned was to translate both directions.
Okay.
We work very high level technical stuff. People don't understand what we talk about. I had to learn how to translate it to them in a way that makes sense to them. Just like a doctor has to translate things to you that you don't understand because you're not a surgeon. And then I had to learn what they were trying to say to me in non-technical speak and their issues and translate that to what it means to us. It's the best thing I ever did. I was okay at it before COVID, but I feel like that's why our security department especially has been so much more successful because I'm the one out talking about it. And I've learned how to translate that into the way other humans communicate. So I can still give you very high level knowledge that'll impress you. But it's not going to impress you if I'm talking in acronyms you don't understand. You just think I'm an idiot that's blabbering. But if I can tell you things that are very critical, very serious, and put them in a way that your brain processes that, now you want to hear what I have to say. And so that's what I've done is just went through that learning process of how do humans communicate? What are they receptive to? What are they not receptive to? What do facial instructions mean? And as you do that, you just finally learn it. I don't have to think about it anymore. It's built into me now because I took the time to understand the normal communication processes. And here's the cool thing. All this stuff's in a book.
It's all online. It's all,
you can find it. And so I just put myself to school on how to deal with people better.
Started looking at things a little differently. You said, oh, here's a whole part of the equation that I haven't even been paying attention to. And once you put your skill set towards that, you decoded something that was mysterious before.
Yeah. And I've surrounded myself with people that got it. My wife is completely different than I am. She's all art and she's a sustainable stylist and a fashion designer and can paint and can draw designs. And that wasn't something that years past that probably would have been interesting to me, but to see what that actually takes and the talent that entails and the some type of weird math to get the colors right. And so what I've really done is try to expose myself to people that aren't exactly like me and how do they communicate and share and understand. And I think that's probably honestly not just in business, but it's changed my entire life.
What has it done for you?
Just the ability to be a little softer in the world. To not think everything has to fit in this rigid box that my brain says it does. My brain is black and white. If you could understand anything about somebody with my condition, and I'm sure people that watch this that have my condition will get this. I'm so good at computers and cybersecurity because I think in ones and zeros, and this all runs off ones and zeros. My brain's like a Microsoft operating system. I can file things in place. And once I could take how other people work and communicate and translate that into how I work and communicate, everything changed, right? And it hasn't required me to be hugely different. I'm still very outspoken. I'm still very in your face. I'm still like, hey, here's the answer. But I've also learned to recognize if I'm giving you the answer and I see that look of the eyes glass over or you're lost or you're just stop, Chris, because I can go forever. And so I'm like, okay, stop, bring them in, see what's happening. I think a lot of it's just being more here and present with the humans instead of just present with the data.
Oh, that's fascinating. I think that present with the data is one thing, but being here and present with humans has allowed you to notice when something doesn't compute on their side. And you're seeing them for how they think, and then you're flexing your style to meet them where they are.
You have to. Data doesn't make sense without context. If you think about it from an engineering standpoint, you can give me a massive amount of data, right? All this data. It could be all these ones and zeros, all this stuff. If I don't know the context and I have no idea what I'm supposed to extrapolate from it or what it is or where it came from or anything, it's just junk, just garbage. But if you come back and you say that same 1,000 terabytes of data, here's the context around the data and here's the algorithm to unpack the data and here, wow, now we've got it. So that's what I learned is I can be getting the same type of data from people, right? The same type of inputs, but without the context of who they are, what their background is, where they came from, what situation they're in currently, the data is useless. And so I've had to tie those together. And I'm telling you, it's changed not just the trajectory of where I've tried to take our company, but where the trajectory of my life has went 100%. And it wasn't like I had some great epiphany, right? I don't want anybody to hear this and be like, oh, he figured all this out. No, man, just COVID hit me in the face.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or by email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
Hit me
really
in the face.
Concentrated some of the things that might have been happening in smaller ways to be almost unavoidable. So you had to, maybe you had to look at it, but I don't know that you had to. You could have turned your face away. You leaned into it.
I think it hit at a good time for me.
Yeah.
Not a good time. There's no good time to go through a worldwide pandemic, but I was in a transitional space in my life. I was getting older. And I'll say this, and I've done a lot of studies around this too. Men's brains don't fully form together and make those final cognitive connections until we're like 40, right? So I was going through this transition in my life where we can look at, I do a lot of studies into physics and particle physics and human biology and all this crazy stuff. And if we look at it, a man is built just because we're mammals to go out and hunt and grab things and fight and take over territory and all this. But there's this weird, cool thing that happens when we get about 40 that both sides of the brain actually start talking to each other. And what does that give you? Empathy and understanding of why this part is this way and this part is this way. So I really did a deep dive into that too and started to understand like that my brain was in a different place than it had been the first 40 years of my life. And so if that's the case, and I position myself to be somewhat intelligent and know things, how do I reshape myself knowing that? And I think that led down a lot of these paths. I learned that I could teach myself the things I didn't know, which I'd already known that, but it didn't ever really just apply to humans, I don't think.
And I think you were doing the best you could with what you had at the time. You really were maximizing the gifts that you brought to the table. And from a perspective of something happened, maybe at the right time, and you were able to differently engage with it, which is a gift. And so now you're working with people differently than you have before. So if you could just boil this down into what has that led to for you in work, in life?
Much more fulfilling engagements and relationships with people and companies and clients. People, many more people coming the other way to me and saying, hey, help us do this thing. Help us with this. Help us do this. One of the things I really started doing at that point was really focusing on doing speaking engagements, right? Not typical, the thing that I would have used to done, but really taught myself how to be on that stage and have the presence to do it. And again, because what that was overcoming a problem. I saw a bunch of people get on stage like me and blabber a bunch of technical stuff and nobody in the audience keep up or understand. It's like, you're not solving anything. And so I really started to go after it from that people perspective. How do I get on this stage and translate? I started to make myself a translator of technology. And I think that's worked in my whole life, right? So now what I have is clients that aren't just, and we deal with some big companies and this stuff's very serious, right? If we don't get security right, we can kill their whole operation. And I think before, a lot of people dealt with me and they're like, oh, this is a really smart engineer. Just give him space, let him do what he does. Like, super weird, but he's going to secure it. Now there's more of the people element involved, right? We're securing it because these are these people's livelihoods. These are their jobs. These are their careers. These are the companies they built. And now that I know more about them and know more about who they are, I understand more about their limitations. I understand more about their strengths, and we can work together better, right? Because we understand each other. And again, it all comes back to the fact if we trip and we fail on something, they're much more apt to give us grace because they know us as people. And so I would say now that my relationships are more people driven than business driven. And if we're kind and if we're smart and we do our job, the money will come. We don't have to focus on that every minute of the day. It will come. The more that we've not worried about it, I feel like the better we've done. I mean, I sound like terrible advice, but we're on a crazy growth curve right now. And the one thing I can tell you, we do not sit around every day and just drill into how much money we're making.
We drill into
how the customers are being served. Our owner founded this himself, sole proprietorship, LLC. There's no outside money, no PE money. He'll tell you every day he has a boss, and it is the people that sign those checks. Our clients are his boss. If they quit signing the checks and sending us money, we're all out of a job. And so what we've really done is focus again. This is how we reverted to the fact that, you know, this led a lot of us down the path after COVID that we're a customer service business. We've always been an IT business and a cybersecurity business, an MSSP. We just restructured our whole leadership chart, whole org chart at the beginning of this year, big leadership retreat to do it, roll it out to the company. And Richie's entire focus was to structure us to serve the client better and to look at the strengths we have as individuals and to use those strengths to service our clients better. And that's the position we need to be in the company. And that's what we've done. And I don't believe that I would be able to pull off exactly what I do and what my charge is now after a decade here if I hadn't taken some time to be introspective and work on myself.
So you've taken it to more than just like a belief. You have replicated that belief in your systems, how you set yourselves up so that you can bring the best of what you have to your customers and specific customer needs based on not just like the, oh, we need this security system to be able to do this thing, but hey, look, there's Bob over there. He runs this business. He needs these things. Here's a little bit more about Bob. Is that right?
It's true. And I used to get really frustrated. I'm a security guy, right? So I'm paranoid, as I should be. I got to secure everything. And I would get frustrated. I hear customers say, we just can't afford that right now. We don't have the money for that. We can't do that. We can't secure that. And I'm like, you're not making this a priority. What's wrong with you? That's crazy. It's not always the case. As you get to know these people more and you get to understand what they're doing, you talk to Bob, who's owned this business for 60 years. And Bob's like, I'm trying to grow this whole section of the business to employ more people in this town where everybody's broke. And all my money's in there right now, and I just don't have any cash flow. And I really am concerned about my security, but Chris, I just can't afford it, and I don't know what to do. That leads you down a path to make some caveats and start to find the lowest hanging fruit that can help them.
And what's be like, possible okay, instead of what's not possible, it sounds.
Right. Because it's a whole different conversation. If you talk to those same two gentlemen, own the same businesses, same women, whatever, same families, and this one is telling you that and saying, I want to try, I'm just trying to do this thing. And this person's over here saying, I don't even care. I got the money. I just don't care. They both told you they can't afford it, but that's not the same conversation. And so if you know that, then you don't put any more time into these people. You're like, oh, you just don't care. You do care. You just don't have the resources. We can pull some of the resources from this person that doesn't care and focus them on this person that does care. And so that's where you get into some more of that nuance, right? What I've learned is this is all nuance, and it's nothing happens without people involved anymore. We talk about AI and we talk about machine learning. It's still people doing all this transactional type of things. And I think that's where it's helped me the most is I make the people part the most important now. And I've turned into an educator as much as an engineer. I don't know how to do brain surgery, right? I'm not a brain surgeon. I would posit if you taught me, I could definitely learn it. But because I don't know, it doesn't make me stupid. And we've done a bad job in IT and cybersecurity of saying users are dumb, right? Cods are dumb. This has been the whole industry for 30 years. They're dumb. They don't know anything. I've learned now, and this is a big change that's happened in that, I posit that they're not dumb. We're dumb. We've done a bad job of teaching them. You can't look at me and say, Chris, you're dumb. You don't know how to do brain surgery when you've never taught me. And so what I've decided is we have to now take the focus off of just the technical. We got to focus on the people, right? Because who's getting attacked the most in security? The people. They're attacking your email. They're coming straight at you. They're coming straight at the user. They're doing social engineering. And so the whole world is even showing us right now that if you don't focus on the human element of security and IT, you're dead. Right. And so I'm thankful that in that moment, I feel like I got a little bit of a head start to start focusing on that. And it's just changed how I focus our security practice, right? The biggest thing you'll hear me say we're terrified of in security now is the human element. Because what I've learned from unpacking people more is they also make very bad decisions that aren't logical and you've got to plan for that, right? I used to think that was because they didn't care. I'll tell you what I've definitely learned. It's not people don't care. It's just we're all not on the same mission at that point. We all have our own thing. And so I would think, if anything, I've learned that the people do care more than I thought they did. It's just finding out where they're at in that moment. Just like I said, the guy that can't afford it because he's trying to help, or the guy that just doesn't want to because he doesn't care. And I've started to dive really a lot deeper into what's the reasoning behind it. And it's also going to judge how much I put out for you.
Yeah, you're calibrating with that person so that you can meet them where they are. One thing you said I want to circle back around on was the thing I'm most concerned about as a security person is the people. And that's where the greatest opportunity is, but also maybe the greatest threat. I don't know. It reminded me of something that was said by this futurist back in the late 1900s, John Nesbitt. And he said something along the lines of the greatest advances in this century that we're in now, you might know this, will not happen because of technology, but because of an understanding of what it truly means to be human. And I'm curious what you think about that.
I think it's 100% true. And we've proven that over and over recently, right? The number one attack vector for cybersecurity right now is humans. They're attacking the employees, the C-suite, the people, right? They're still beating on servers and firewalls. They're attacking the people. Why? Because these are human actions, right? If the password lives in your head, who do we have to come at to steal the password from? You. And what we're seeing as the attacks become more well-crafted because of machine learning and AI, somebody sitting in the Philippines that doesn't even speak English can send you this very well-crafted email. They've used AI to search all your websites and look at all your LinkedIns and your employees' private social medias, so they know all this stuff about you. And now that person is delivering a very well-crafted attack to you. That what's it going to do? Trigger things that would affect a person, not a computer. So that's what I call it, social engineering. We're no longer just engineering the technology to break in. We're engineering the people. They are the scariest element right now because we have to give you access rights and credentials. So what can you give away? Access rights and credentials. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you give them away, somebody logs in as you. So what we've really tried to learn over the years is we do free trainings. This came out of COVID. We do free cybersecurity trainings. So we pull the barrier to entry down, right? So you're like, I don't have to pay for this. It's free. And then what we're doing is training the human element. Mm-hmm. And that's where I've gotten good at being a translator. I've found out these people don't understand cybersecurity because nobody's ever told them in language that they understand. And so we do these free trainings to say, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Business Person, this is where they're trying to attack you. This is how, this is the actions you need to take. And by simply making them aware, they become vigilant because they're like, I don't want to be that person that does that.
Yeah.
And so again, that human element in cybersecurity right now is the biggest element. You know how we could keep everything safe?
Oh.
Alexa, if I took every person off a computer, we would never have another breach. But the biggest element right now in cybersecurity is the human element, right? Because if this system needs access to something and they can't break into it, they're just going to come to you and say, how do you log in? As we teach people that and expose them to it, and then here's the biggest key I've learned. We've got to tie it to their personal life. We've got to make them so intertwined. If I come and speak to you in a business and your employer has said, come listen to Chris, he's going to talk about cybersecurity so we keep our business safe.
Or Matt.
Whatever. That doesn't matter to them, right? They're like, oh, the owner's making $1 million a year. Who cares? I get them in the room. I start talking about cybersecurity as a whole. to their personal life, to the work? Do you want to be the person that gets fired because you did this wrong? And also, we see personal ransomware now where they're ransoming your home computer and you got to pay $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 to get your stuff back. Because if they will build a life of security at home with their kids' data, their data, all that stuff, it leaks into work. So what, again, are we doing? We're really hitting on these personal narratives in their life, right? I tell them, you may not care about Bob's data. Do you care about your bank accounts? Because I'm going to tell you how I can break into them in 2 seconds right now. When I explain that, oh my gosh, now it's personal. Now it's serious. Now it matters. And then they go do better stuff at work. That was mind-blowing to me. When for years we couldn't get them to do the right thing ever, we changed the training. It's all we did. Same day, I changed it, focused on them. And now we see their work stuff gets better and better and better.
It's like a flywheel. And I think that what you said earlier was, if I focus on the people, the rest is going to come in business. And when it comes to our next century, what's going to really make our societies work? I think if you focus on the people, the rest will potentially follow. So it sounds like you're just a kind of a predictor of those things. And I hope that you can keep doing the great work you are. So tell me a little bit, if you were talking to somebody that was maybe a young budding engineer that had similar thought processes as you did 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago, what advice would you give to them?
Find a mentor. Find a mentor that's not like you, that understands you, but isn't exactly like you. If they're exactly like you, there's no room for growth. You're just going to grow into what they are and you all are already. So one of the biggest things that's helped me, I was at DuPont. I was young because of my skill sets. I've gotten into these positions very young where all my peers were like 60 and I'm like 35. What I found out in that scenario was how important that mentorship is, right? 35 in my world's not that seasoned in this stuff. But what I found in a mentor was somebody that could help me overcome the things I didn't understand. So one of the first things he ever told me, and he was my boss at one point, he was like, Chris, you're super smart, but you got to realize not everybody understands the things you do. Not everybody can grasp the concept like you can. So you just spit this stuff out. They don't get it and then they get lost. That mentorship was key for me because in the areas I wasn't able to go to bat and speak for myself and have the right words, I had somebody that I could say, hey, how do I navigate this? You've been doing this for 30 plus years. The thing I wish I had learned sooner before that was how important that was and how that you won't get anywhere in a career without other humans. You just won't. You can't do this by yourself. It's impossible. And if you try to, it becomes very painful. And I spent a lot of years like being an island of one. I know what I know. I think a lot of jobs, Alexa, the only reason they kept me around is because of how smart I was, not because of how easy I was to deal with, because I was a pain, right? I wanted things exactly in a very specific way, in a very structured manner, and I would be a nightmare about it. I've let loose of that. It's just crazy. Why should everybody else have to work like I work when I'm 1.01% of the population? And so that's really been that transformational thing for me is like the people are so involved and the people will help you. One of the things that we've done, I tried for years to do things that I wasn't good at either, right? Mm-hmm. You think you need to be in management. You think you need to be in leadership. You think you need to manage people. I'm terrible at managing people. I have no bandwidth for going off course. And so if I'm sick as can be and I'm dying, I'm going to be at this computer away from other humans in my office working. Not everybody's like that, and I can't expect them to be. And so what we've done very recently is something I wish I would have done years ago in my career when we restructured the organization. I have no direct reports now, not for HR, not for anything. Now, I still run all the security and that stuff, definitely. That's my decision. But if I'm not good with people and I'm not good at managing people and managing HR issues and all that, why am I in that chain? And so I would say find your strengths and find what you're good at and try to focus on that. Don't think the world, you have to follow the model of the world. But also on those things you're not strong at, take your own personal time to get better at it. That's the biggest growth for me. I've taken personal time over the last amount of years to get better at the people side of it. If you're great at the people side, get good at take time at learning the engineering side. But one thing I do know is in this world we're in right now, if you're very technically adept and have these things, the differentiator is the soft skills. People laugh at it like we've been saying it for years. I can train a monkey to do IT. They can push buttons. They can do things, right? They're smart. They're primates. I can't train them to sit and have intelligent conversations with other humans and be kind and be friendly and be compassionate. And so now we've moved it. And that's what I would say. I wish earlier in my career that I understood more what kindness and compassion and thought for your fellow human could do. Because when I put that in place, I've went from here where everybody thought I was at a high level already. I feel like it's just gone to the moon. And here's the last thing. I said this to a group of college students last week. Stop talking about religion and politics in business, please. It sounds like such a simple thing, right? But we've run into a lot of scenarios recently in business with internal employees and employees from other companies where they want to drag all this outside political and religious and world static into business. Yes, it isn't a place. Hey, we understand economic numbers, financial numbers. We have to get that. But I firmly believe, and we'll die on this hill, that doesn't have a place in our normal everyday business conversations to cause more static on top of what we're already trying to do. And we've seen a lot of that lately.
What does the static do that is diminishing your mind?
It makes you not be able to have to solve real problems about what the problem is you're trying to accomplish, right? So you're trying to accomplish, you're trying to solve a problem. You're trying to solve a problem about data sets. And this is a prime example. Got on a meeting 2 weeks ago. We're trying to solve a problem about data sets. Somebody says, yeah, we need to move this here. We need to do that. Oh, if we do that in Maryland, they added a 3% data tax. Okay. It was a real conversation. That's fine. Cool. That's a thing we need to talk about. So we go down that way. We should place it in another data center so there's not that data tax. This guy goes off the rails. I can't believe they would tax us. I can't believe that Maryland would do that. Then he starts talking about the president and other presidents. And now he's on Obama. And we're just like.
And then you're not even facing what was important in the first place. Your example is excellent. And reducing the static between human beings so that you can face the problem at hand is the key.
That's what I'm getting at, right? He introduced static that didn't need to be there. We're trying to solve a very high level problem. And now you're asking us to discuss 50 other problems that none of us can even do anything about that just cause people to get mad. And so eventually one of the other guys on the call was like, dude, what are you doing? We're like, stop. You know what I mean? He'd be called out. This is a grown man. Stop. What? And then he gets mad, right? I've had to give that advice more lately than you would ever imagine. And if I would want people to know anything, don't be a part of that trap, right? You can believe whatever you want to believe in your personal life. I do not care. I don't pay your bills. We're not for a relationship. Like, we're cool. We're cool. Don't care. Don't drag that in. And we've seen more of that since COVID. I think you would posit. We've been in the business world a little bit. We've seen so much more of that. And I'm starting to see it some more with some of the younger people that we did on meetings and stuff with. And I'm just like, don't, man, you'll, because what you'll do is alienate yourself and nobody will want to work with you anymore. Even if they're on your side, they don't want to hear about it in that scenario.
I think that's good advice. I think that part of what is important is not really focusing on what makes us divided, but what are the things that actually connect us? What are the things that are important to all of us? And that can usually be found once you start to lean in as a human and be present, like you said.
It's what we fight all the time. It's like, I'm guilty as well. As soon as this guy started saying the things he was saying that don't belong in a business meeting, I was like, I automatically had a picture of who this person was. I'll admit that. We all do. And if you say you don't,
I think if you're human, that is what happens, right?
And it just made me really, I had to look at myself because as soon as it started, you know what I said? I don't want to work with this idiot again. That was my internal dialogue. And I'm being very honest with people on here. Honestly. I said, I don't want to work with this idiot again. Why? I don't need added static. I'm on the phone with other engineers trying to solve a problem and you put all this static in the middle of it. And so I've just never thought I would. It's funny too, because I'm telling you, the people part's important, right? The personal part's important, but don't drag it too far, I guess is what I would say. You're never going to hear me. One of the things that's hard for me too is the oversharing. Get on a meeting. Hey, how's everybody doing today? And somebody just tells you the worst, most horrible thing that is happening. And you're just like, nobody knows what to say. You're
what
like,
do I do with that? When you were doing the COVID thing, a lot of times some of those things became normalized. Like you were not normalized, but you were faced with things you maybe never had to face and were very uncomfortable about. And you found a way to face it with courage. And now you also found, how do we stay in it together and keep our eye on what's important to both of us as a human to human kind of level without taking it to a place where somebody feels like they don't belong or like they're other. So how can you find ways to connect is one of the big messages I'm taking away from you, Chris. So I know that there will be people out there that are like, I want to learn more about how Chris did this. Chris's brain is interesting to me. I want to chat with him or I want to hear him speak. Can you tell me how people can get in touch with you?
100%. You're free to share my LinkedIn with them. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. I'm also open to email, right? I live in my email every day like the rest of us. And I'm always happy to talk, right? Part of my role is we've freed me up to have these conversations. I'm Vice President of Security and Growth. And what I tell you, growth means people to me, not money. Growth means growing people. The money will come. And we even do a lot of free education and training around speaking around not just IT. I speak on neurodivergency in IT and how people like me that are neurodivergent, as we call them now, assimilate. We're some of the best technical people you would ever have. I tell you, it's not just me. I have people that work with us, coworkers that are on the spectrum like I am. If you understand them and understand their personal differences and how to work with them, they'll be some of the best employees you ever have in your life. Loyal, smart, And again, how do you understand what they're good at is by understanding the people side of it. So that's, I think, if I would say anything, one of the things that we really try to do is to fight against that otherization that we've seen, right? That's a word that's popped up more lately, but it's also what I've seen really fuel a divide in certain conversations, right? Like when I said that person got on the call and did that, they were just otherizing people for no reason on a call. Nobody wants to hear that. Even if I'm on your side, I don't want to denigrate other people. And so I think that's what we've really seen is, and we need to look like our customer bases. My customers have people with Asperger's and people that are on the spectrum and people that are LGBTQ and people that are trans and people that are all these different things. Why in the world would a customer want to work with me if I don't look like them and not like them and don't understand who they are in this world? So we hire all those same people. And what you'll find is maybe this Mr. or Mrs. Customer doesn't communicate well with somebody, but maybe you brought in this person that kind of speaks their language and now that's the person they deal with. And all of a sudden the relationship is great. But if you have this white male sanitized world, you're not looking like the people you're talking to every day. And that's scary. And we've really went a long way from hiring for engineering prowess first to hiring for personality and people first. And I think that's drastically changed the makeup of Advantage.
Incredible.
As a company.
That's a lesson that I don't always hear from folks that are in the technical space. And I think it's a powerful message to say, let's get away from just the zeros and ones and think about what's on the other side of that so that we can contextualize that data. When you contextualize that data from a human perspective, what you're doing is you're inviting people to the table and you're going to get more done every time. I have just enjoyed our conversation so much, Chris. Thank you so much for spending time on Transformation Unfiltered.
Folks, absolutely.
The things that are standing out to me are a ton, but at the end of the day, I think Chris and his team have figured out how to fight otherization by humanizing their technical business. And now it's leading to great results and probably a whole lot of fulfillment from your perspective. Is that true, Chris?
100%. I love what I do. The coolest thing about my job is I solve problems. Like we fix things. You call me, they're broke, we got you. And to be able to do that and to see the outcome, right? Because if you call me and your whole business is shut down, you're losing money. But if within the matter of 15 minutes, we can put our brains on it, bring everything back up, now you're making money. So we see really serious outcomes. And to be able to, I used to be driven by tying those outcomes to metrics, right? What are our PKIs? What are our performance metrics? What are whatever? To be able to tie those outcomes to real humans that you can see smile and say, man, my family made an extra 100,000 this year because you all enabled us with technology to outpace our competition. That's all the pat on the back I'll ever need.
That's amazing.
That's where we are. Our job is as humans to enable you through technology and through smart human consulting to beat your competition and win. That's all we're here for. And that's what our new slogan that we've put on all of our stuff is we disrupt IT intelligence. How? Because we don't think about it the way everybody else has. We're disrupting an entire industry by putting the people first. And we're growing and we're getting bigger and we're getting recognition for that.
Yep. And you're embodying it now. So folks, if you want to talk to Chris, all the information that you need to get in touch with him, whether you want to talk with him about technology or humans or being on the spectrum and being a successful part of the workplace and kind of kicking butts, doing a great job, give him a holler. I invite you, if you would like to hear more from other humans about what it's like to go through some tough times and transform your business and really maybe even transform your life and the world, if I'm being so idealistic, please join us on Transformation Unfiltered. You can like this podcast, you can subscribe, and you can find us on your favorite podcast platform.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.